14A window seat, tennis shoes and faded jeans. Nervous as he tells me it's his first time on a plane. We took off and headed east. I was thumbing through the magazines. He felt like talking and offered me his name. So I asked him how he was, and he smiled and said, "Well, son, I've been better, I've been worse. I've chased after pretty girls, seen a couple places that I never thought I'd see. I've walked into harder times, I've walked out the other side. It seems like you end up getting what you need." Yeah, looking down from 30,000 feet, life's been good. Another night, another show, 100 different cities, they all just seem the same. He asked me what it must be like, singing songs under the lights. Well, it's got its moments, just the same as anything. I miss my town, I miss my wife, but I'm up here with you tonight. Said, "I've been better, I've been worse. I have loved a pretty girl. I've seen a couple places that I never thought I'd see. I've walked into harder times, I've walked out the other side. It seems like you end up getting what you need." Yeah, looking down from 30,000 feet, life's been good.
Well, if you haven't heard that song before, it's called 30,000 Feet by Ben Rector. And Ben Rector has quickly become a staple on my playlist. He sings such meaningful songs. And if you missed it, 30,000 Feet is about this encounter that he has with a guy on a plane. And in a sense, they step back and look at life, or look down from 30,000 feet, and come to the conclusion that life has been good. They're filled with gratitude. They're grateful. And it's that idea of gratitude that I want to look at here this morning. The realm of positive psychology, or I should say the field of positive psychology, is pretty young. It's about 3 decades old. So historically, psychologists, researchers have really focused a lot on the negative aspects of psychology, but just recently they've begun studying the positive elements of psychology. And here's what they found. This blew my mind. They said that of all the attributes that you can develop, of all of them, gratitude is most strongly associated with mental health. Gratitude. In 3 decades of studies, they found that grateful people, people that intentionally cultivated gratitude, they improved physical, emotional, and their social well-being. They found greater optimism and happiness in life. They had improved feelings of connection in times of loss. They had increased self-esteem, all because of gratitude. Heightened energy levels. A strengthened heart, immune system, and decreased blood pressure. Improved emotional and academic intelligence. An expanded capacity for forgiveness. Decreased stress, anxiety, depression, and even headaches. Improved self-care and a greater likelihood to exercise. And the last one, this I found interesting, a heightened sense of spirituality, which they defined as the ability to see something bigger than themselves. All because of gratitude, for being thankful. But there's a problem. Researchers have also found that while we, this generation, people today, while we have more than ever, we have more stuff, more opportunities than ever, more available to us than ever, people are also less grateful than they've ever been. Less satisfied than they've ever been. You know, it's not natural for any of us to be grateful. It's not something that comes naturally. You have to work at it, right? And you know, right, if you like cars and you're driving out on the road, what cars do we tend to notice? And I'm speaking to myself here, right? What cars do we tend to notice? Do we notice the cars that maybe aren't as nice as ours that will naturally make us feel grateful for what we have? Or do we tend to notice the cars that are nicer than ours that will develop this kind of feeling of want, right? Or you know, maybe you like clothes, right? What has the ability to stir you up more emotionally? Walking into, you know, looking at your closet, or for some of us, it's actually walking into your closet, you know, with all your clothes, right? Counting how many outfits you have, or going out and shopping for new clothes. And I'm not saying this to make anybody feel guilty. Like I said, this is something we all struggle with. For me, it's electronics. I get something new, and right away, I'm like, oh, it's coming out next, right? It's just, it's something that is not natural for us. It is natural for us to want. It is not natural for us to be grateful. But if this is true, there's any merit to the past 3 decades in the field of positive psychology, it might be good for us to look a little bit at gratitude, to take some intentional steps when it comes to being more grateful, because we tend to be sensitive to what we lack and totally numb to what we already have. Maybe we should take a closer look at this idea of gratitude. Specifically today, we're looking at Psalms of Gratitude. If you've been with us for the past couple weeks, you know we're in a series right now called Playlist. The reason that we call the series Playlist is because we're looking at the book of Psalms. And the book of Psalms were originally written to be a book of songs. They're musical. And if you get nothing else out of this series, nothing else, here's what we're trying to talk about. Here's what we're trying to help all of us here understand. The Psalms, when you read the Psalms, they give us language to communicate with God. They serve as models for us to communicate with God. And here's what we see in the Psalms. And this, for me, this is liberating. This is my favorite thing about the Psalms. The Psalms show us, in the model for how we communicate with God, they show us that it is safe to be brutally honest with God. It is safe to be totally transparent, to completely expose yourself, because He knows anyway, right? But what you'll see in the Psalms, you'll come across some things. If you read through the Psalms, you'll be like, wow, did I really just read that? Did He really just say that? Did He really just tell God that? But what we see is people just being themselves. The most natural, the most sincere, the most genuine version of themselves is what they present to God. And unfortunately, that's not what a lot of us have learned. Right? Some of us maybe come from traditions, or maybe some of us have been taught that you've got to say certain things when you're going to pray, right? Or you've got to get in a certain stance, you know, or you've got to end a prayer a certain way with certain words by doing certain things. And the Psalms teach us something totally different. They show us that the more honest, the more real you are with God, that we are with God, the more we'll get out of the Psalms and our prayer lives and our relationships with God. Here's the other thing. I mentioned this before, though. The Psalms were written as a book of songs. They were written to be sung. They're musical. Now, here's the thing about music, and we all know this, right? If I were to tell you to think of your favorite song right now, everybody would think of the song. Why? Because everybody has a favorite song or a few favorite songs. Nobody hates music. Music has this incredible power. It has the power to make you do things you normally wouldn't do, right? Have you ever been in a car? Let's be real here for a second. All of a sudden you hear a song, and before you know it, you are just having this jam session inside your car all by yourself, right? Or maybe you're driving and you're on the road and you look next to you at a stoplight and there's someone and they're just like, you know, to them, they're on stage in front of thousands, right? And they're just going to town, and then you catch them and you look at them. It's like, yeah. But it's happened to all of us, right? So it has this ability to just, because somebody, think about it, if it's the radio, somebody is playing an MP3 file from miles away and broadcasting over the air, and for some reason has this ability to get to your soul, right? It makes you do things you wouldn't normally do. My brother, he's a great dancer. And I just recently, just like a couple months ago, I asked him, I said, Nick, do you go home and practice dancing, you know? And he said, no, I do what the music tells my body to do. Music has this ability to move you in a way that words by themselves cannot. Do you know that ancient armies were actually led out to battle by their musicians? Why? Because it has this ability to stir you up. It's why we listen to music when we work out, or some of us, right? It's because it does more than words can. There's a prophet named Elijah in the Old Testament, and he's about to give these people this incredible prophecy, this word from God. And right before he does it, he stops and he says, wait, get me a harpist. Because he wants someone to be, you know, like playing the harp while he's... Because when you put music behind something, it has this ability to penetrate. But here's I've kind of hinted at this, right? We know this. Great songs, and this is true of the Psalms. Great songs are experiences. Meaning, they can either meet you somewhere, or they can take you somewhere. If you go through a really sad breakup or something bad happens to you and you turn on your radio, you are looking for a song that's going to be sad, you know, something that's going to be able to articulate what you're feeling. There's something so therapeutic about a song that will meet you where you are. There's another song by Ben Rector. It's called When a Heart Breaks. It's a sad song. Alyssa, who works in our office, she said, oh, you listen to this song when you need a good cry. Why? Because it has the ability to meet you somewhere, right? At the same time, though, it can take you somewhere. You may be driving in your car or sitting in your room or working with your headphones on, whatever, and all of a sudden, you know, a song comes. Maybe you're having a great day on your way to the beach, sun's shining, you know, everything's hunky-dory, you're feeling great. All of a sudden, a song comes on, and it's about, you know, a little girl and her puppy, and by the end of the song, her puppy dies, you know? And all of a sudden, you're a mess. You're like weeping, and it's why? Because it, I mean, you were having a great time a few minutes ago, and now all of a sudden you've heard something, and now it's totally changed your mood, you're doing something. Why? Because it was an experience that was able to take you somewhere. Now, here's what I'm getting at, right? The Psalms can do the same thing. There are Psalms of lament, which are sad Psalms, that when you feel desperate and broken, when you feel like God has abandoned you, there is a psalm for that. When you're angry, even, we call them imprecatory psalms. There are psalms of these people pouring out their hearts, being brutally honest, totally transparent, and they're angry. And these can meet you, if you allow yourself to enter into them, to experience them, they can meet you before God with words that you just don't have. And then there are psalms, and this is where we get to gratitude, that can take you somewhere. You know, if what I said is true, if what if it's not natural for us to be grateful, then we need to allow the Psalms of gratitude to take us on a journey with them, so that in the end, we find ourselves in a place of gratitude. I don't know how you're feeling right now. I don't know how you're feeling when you woke up this morning. If you're feeling super grateful, I did not wake up feeling super grateful this morning. When I went to bed, I woke up three times before I actually woke up for the day. The first one was because at 2 a.m. my alarm went off. The second one was at 4 a.m. because my daughter Mia had to go potty. And then at 6 a.m. we woke up again to my son Logan, who's screaming. And, you know, he decided he's going to start the day, and he's got a diaper, you know, down to here. And it's not like there's not these feelings of just overflowing gratitude. But if you'll allow, my hope is that just real quick, I want to show you one psalm, one. And if you'll allow, it can take you with it to a place of real, sincere gratitude. Psalm I want to look at is Psalm 100. If you want to have it in front of you, I'm going to have it on the screen. If you want to have it right in front of you, there Bibles in the racks, and it's on page 936. It's Psalm 100, and this is a psalm. It is written by a guy who is just over the top, filled with joy, gratitude, excitement. He starts off. He says, "Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Shout for joy to the Lord." Now, right now, it's 11:45. It's still before noon. And if I said, okay, we're all going to shout for joy right now, everyone would be like, oh, please, no, right? Maybe we'd get a few, like, mediocre groans, but it's not something we'd want to do. But when you're stirred emotionally, we have this tendency to overflow with joy. It happens every day. This phrase, shout for joy, could also be translated, make a joyful noise. And we do this, right? If you play sports or you watch sports, there are times where you're just like overflowing and you're like, yes! You know, just a couple days ago, our softball team were in the playoffs, which is a miracle. And everybody makes a playoff, so it's not a miracle. But we won one game, and we had a huge lead, and we are like slowly blowing that lead because we tend to do that as well. And the other team's coming back, and we really needed to make a stop. And the guy who's up is this big, you know, like guy, and he hits this rocket right to second base. It takes a hop, and then Felicia Descher makes this Spider-Man like snatch and snatches it out of the air. Then with a shoulder that's not even 100%, she spins around, throws the guy out at first. And it was like right on cue, our whole team just like lets out this huge shout, because that's what we do when we're excited. Right? Has anybody you love ever come up to you and told you that they're going to have a baby, or they're expecting a child? What do you say? You're not like, oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm sure. Right? You're like, what? Are you kidding me? This is great. Right? Whatever. In my family, we're like, you know, loud Irish Italian people. If you ever surprise somebody with a visit, shouts of joy. You know, they open the door like, hey, look who's here. Hey, he's here. He showed up, right? You know, and it's like everyone's yelling, because that's what we do. We're overflowing, shouting for joy. We have reason to celebrate. It's natural for us. We may not say, oh, I shouted for joy, but we do that. Now let me ask you a question. Honestly, what kind of feelings spring up out of you when you think of God? Really, be real. You know, for some of us, it's feelings of inadequacy, feelings of guilt, feelings of distance, not these shouts of joy. There's a reason here. There's a trigger. In your Bible, if you have it open, I have it like this on the screen, you see the word Lord. The word Lord, it's in most Bibles, it's in a little bit of a different font. I love fonts, but it's a little bit, it might be all caps, it might be, in some way they distinguish it. And the reason why is because it's not the Hebrew word for Lord. Whenever you see the word Lord written like that, what that means is that the writer is using God's name. the name Yahweh. And to an ancient Jewish person, the name Yahweh is a trigger. It's a trigger. It triggers feelings that Pastor Josh talked about last week. There's this you know, incredible event where Moses, every ancient Jewish person knew who Moses was. He's standing on top of Mount Sinai. He's about to bring these Jewish people out into the wilderness, and he knows it's going to be really, really hard. So he says to God, he says, look, I need you to show me your glory. I need you to show me the essence of your character. I need you to show me that you are good. Would you make me confident in who you are before you send me out on this like terrible journey? So God says, okay, I can't show you all of myself, but I'll give you a little glimpse. And he kind of sets Moses aside, and then he passes before him. And there's this monumental event. There's this expression, this overflow that comes out of Moses when he sees God pass before him. He shouts out, he says, Yahweh, Yahweh, gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. And if you ever read the Old Testament, what you will see is that God is repeatedly described with those exact words. That becomes the trademark description of God. And so when the writer here says, shout for joy to Yahweh, every Hebrew-speaking reader there, every ancient Jewish person is shouting for joy for the God who is gracious, he's compassionate, he is so slow to anger, and he is abounding, overflowing with unreasonably persistent love for you. Whether you're good or bad, whether you trust him or not, whether you believe in him or not, feel close or far, he is abounding in this love for you. And so it stirs up these feelings of excitement within him. Because of that trigger, it's this better than I deserve kind of love. You know, if you think about this, and if you know the Bible, if you're pretty familiar with the Bible, if you think about human beings and God, it wouldn't be unreasonable for God to tell us that we need to earn his love. It wouldn't be unreasonable. That's how us human beings, that's how we relate to one another. You know, when you have if you're dating someone, you're dating them, and you're kind of hoping to earn their love. That's how a lot of human beings interact. It wouldn't even be unreasonable for God to tell us that we needed to pray that he would love us. But instead, what we read is that what we're told is to pray that we would simply understand the unbelievable depths of God's love for us. Not that we should earn it, not that we should pray that he would love us, but that we would just grasp what the Apostle Paul calls love beyond knowledge. It's this persistent, persistent love that just does not give up. Then in light of that, he continues on to verse 2. He says, worship the Lord. Again, it's not the word Lord, it's the name Yahweh. Worship Yahweh with gladness. Come before him, he says, with joyful song. This word for worship is the Hebrew word. It also means to serve. It has this idea of working but in honor of God, of serving but unto God. He's saying, go live your lives, but do it for him out of gratitude because you are loved, because you are pursued, because you are cherished as a response. This isn't a command as much as it is an invitation to just go do it for him. He says, come before him with joyful song. Come before him and be happy to see him. And I don't know about you, but my instinct is not to do that. It's to, you know, come before God like, oh, I blew it again, right? Or however you pray, we come before him with feelings of I'm not enough. You probably don't like me today. But there's an invitation here. Just come before him with joyful song. Come before him. You don't have to sing if you don't. I don't like to sing. Come before him and be happy to do it. My grandmother, she loves me a lot. And when I see her, she, you know, she's this small but just, you know, very excitable Italian woman. And when I see her, she opens her arms and she like comes and she grabs me and she kisses me so hard it hurts my cheekbones, you know. And when I see her, it's like this invitation to come before her and just be happy because I know she is, one, thrilled to see me, and two, she loves me like crazy. Right? And just kind of compare that to how we tend to like come before God. Do we go to God, you know, I'm not comparing him to my grandmother, but what I'm saying is like, do we go knowing that we're going to feel cherished, or do we go feeling like we're not living up? So he goes on. He says in verse 3, he says, "Know that the Lord," again, "know that Yahweh is God. It's he who made us. We're his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture." Now, if I, on a normal day, if I sit down and open my Bible, I come to this verse, I'm reading, okay, "know that the Lord is God." Well, that's not really news to me. Know that the Lord is God. Right? And I would just breeze over and go on, right on to the next thing. But if you understand the implications of Lord, Yahweh, what we were just talking about, the people that he's writing to, the original readers here, they would have had some kind of concept of God. Right, whether it was, you know, some idol or some myth, they understand there's a man upstairs that's controlling something, or maybe several people, right? What he's doing here is offering these people comfort. Like, okay, you know someone's in charge. Know that it's Yahweh. It is the God who is gracious and compassionate and overflowing. Know that he is God. This is a statement of comfort. It's of relief. You can rest and enjoy and appreciate this reality. It's he who made us. We're his people, the sheep of his pasture. That image of sheep and a shepherd in a pasture, it's one we see all through the Bible. Shepherds saw it as their responsibility to take care of their sheep. If the sheep wandered off, the shepherd left and went to go follow and find that other sheep, and then he would carry the sheep back. The sheep learned to look to the shepherd for safety, for provision, for love. There was an intimate relationship between the sheep and the shepherd. And the readers of this, is kind of weird to us because most of us don't have pet sheep, but to the people that he's writing to, they get this. We're the sheep of his pasture. Can look to him and rest, be confident, enjoy that reality. We're his. And so naturally we respond. He says, "So enter his gates," in the next verse, "with thanksgiving. Enter his courts with praise." This is a reference to the Old Testament temple. What he's saying again is just come before him and don't miss out on the opportunity to appreciate this. Give thanks to him, he says. Praise his name. A natural response. And finally, he concludes this psalm with what he's been hinting at all along. Yahweh. "For Yahweh is good, and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations." Again, he uses that trigger word, calling God, not master, not king, but Yahweh. Triggering those feelings again, he uses the word good. It literally means full of generosity, with love that doesn't quit. And he's faithful for all generations. This shepherd will never abandon his sheep. So that's Psalm 100. Done. You see all this gratitude. This guy is just, or girl, I don't know who wrote it, but he's filled. He's overflowing, right? Here's what I want all of us to see. Did you notice all this gratitude? Did you notice what he said about his present circumstances? What he said about what was currently going on in his life? Not one thing. Not one thing. See, this kind of gratitude is independent of our present circumstances. It is based not on what God has given to us, but on who he is to us. Now, don't get me wrong. It includes what God has given us. But it is based, it is built, the foundation of our gratitude is who God is to us, the fact that we are His. We are the sheep of His pasture, and from that flows gratitude in all areas of our lives. Circumstances change, but God does not. For that reason, we can be grateful. You know, I mentioned earlier, when I listed off all those health benefits of being grateful, that same article that I found those, the doctor, her name is Dr. Randy Kamen. She's from Boston University, Harvard. She's an author. She's a researcher. She's a pioneer in this field. And she says, she offers some practical ways that you can cultivate gratitude into your life. She says, one, make a ritual of 2 to 5 minute gratitude meditations every day. She says you should also journal, write down, and read what you're grateful for. 3 to 5 things every day. And amazingly, she said that people that did this for just, even if they only did it for 2 weeks, they saw lasting effects for up to 6 months. 6 months. And behind all of this, do you hear, can you see the depths of God's love? Like when He tells us in His letter, in Paul's letter to the church in Ephesus, when He says, always be thankful for everything in all circumstances. I've heard some people say that biology and psychology are catching up with theology. In other words, from the pages of our playlist, from the pages of these Psalms, from the pages of our scriptures, we have a God who's whispering from the background, saying, hey, I've been saying this. When are we going to realize that He is our advocate? That He's on our side? He really, really does love us and care about us. This book of Psalms, I mean, they practically are 2 to 5 minute gratitude meditations. Not all of them, but the ones of gratitude. Right? And we're invited all throughout to just stop and think about everything that God has done for us, to be grateful. If you ever read through the New Testament, maybe take like a pencil and just mark down every place where God says to be thankful. It's because He knows. It's because He cares. I want to leave you with this one story, and then we'll wrap things up. I went to the Stony Brook School 7th through 12th grade. And when I was in 7th grade, we had chapel. It's a Christian school, so we had chapel 4 times a week. And I remember one chapel talk. So in 7th grade, it was about, I don't know, over 10 years ago. More than that. I'm not going to do math right now. Come on, give me a break. 7th grade was a message given by Tonya Detweiler. She comes to Three Village Church. She was here this morning. And in her message, she was talking about gratitude. And at the very end, she gave a challenge. She said, if you can send me an email every single day for 1 year, and in each one of those emails include one thing you're grateful for, I'll buy you a steak dinner. So all the students are like, oh, okay, steak dinner, right? So I spoke to her about it this week. I asked her about it. She said, for about 2 weeks, a bunch of people tried, and they hung in there. But after 2 weeks, nobody was left, except for one person. One person was the director of the middle school. His name was Jeff Adams. And he made it the entire year, every single day, sending her an email about what he was thankful for. At the time of writing, Jeff had an aggressive form of brain cancer. If you knew Jeff, you knew that he lit up every room that he entered. He had this ability of just spreading joy. He was so grateful for life. And if there's anybody who had circumstances to not be grateful, it would be him. Not long after this, he passed away, and he left behind his 10-month-old daughter and his wife. But if you knew Jeff, you also knew that his gratitude was not based on what God had given him, on the hand that he'd been dealt, on the changing circumstances of life, on the diagnosis that he was issued. It was based on who God was to him, because he understood that he was a sheep in God's pasture. He understood that he was his. And so he lived a life that was filled with joy. Shouldn't we all do the same? To intentionally cultivate these habits of gratitude that include what God has given us. But we would be wise to base it on who he is to us. The God who is gracious, compassionate, slow to anger, and abounding, overflowing with persistent, relentless love for us. Let's pray. God, you have given us in this room more than we're ever grateful for. And yet, in spite of that, you continue to bless us. You continue to give us more and more. Would you help us to see that and be grateful? But more importantly, would you help us to get a glimpse, to spend time daily, to have interactions that show us that you are good, that you love us, that help us to grasp the depths of your love, so that we would be people who are grateful, who are confident in our Father's love for us. We ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen.